Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, Blog Talk. We're having a couple technical difficulties on our end, so we're working on getting things going here. So just bear with us for a couple of minutes.
I love it when the tech doesn't work.
Yeah. Tech suddenly gets different ideas as to what it wants to do.
It's supposed to make our life so much easier, yeah?
In theory.
In theory. Theory is always in theory.
All right. Let's see what we got here.
Maybe, possibly.
Maybe. Don't know.
That's so.
It'll only do upright if we do that. Not sure if y'all can hear us out there in Facebook land.
But the camera does not want to do landscape.
Nothing wants to work.
Do
it
upright and have to get close. No. Not like we're married or anything.
We're not. No. But that's like amateur hour for what we're not working. We're past that.
Except for when the tech doesn't work.
Yes, I know. Okay. We are going to be a little late tonight.
Sir, what are you doing on that table? Dude, you're making me fall.
We are not live streaming right now.
Hello.
Hello.
We are having technical difficulties. Oh. Hey, baby.
Let me text my mother.
Did you ask him where you are?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Baby. Hey, sir. Yes, don't worry. I'm going to nap at you. Yep. Yeah. Good boy.
We got married with that Blog Talk Radio because... Yeah.
We are live on Blog Talk.
We are live on that. But
y'all heard me talk to cat.
That's okay. The cats are looking at us weird right now.
Yeah.
You know where to find your baby.
Sorry?
I said, you know where to find Betty. There's eggnog in the fridge if you want to have nog.
I do.
And there's spice rum on the table.
So my next question was going to be.
What are you mixing it with?
Yeah. Like, oh, man, it's very nice. Thank
you. Yes.
Okay.
Hey. Hey. Do you want to go Black Friday shopping? Because mommy's not going Black Friday shopping this year. At least that early in the morning, I will be providing caffeine to all of the Friday shoppers. None of my others, sir. Although I will say, Chris and I have gone Black Friday shopping in the past.
And apparently we're live, but we don't have video.
Oh, this is fun.
Oh, this is real cute.
Okay, so can everybody hear us at least? Can you hear us? Let's get confirmation on that.
Sorry, where do I find it in the fridge?
I'll be back.
Good evening, everybody. Sorry that we are having some very significant technical difficulties tonight.
Have you tried turning it off and on again?
Yeah, I know. Actually, yes.
Oh, cool.
So, hi, everybody. Very sorry about this. We're having these issues. Our camera does not quite want to work with us tonight, which is unfortunate. Oh, let me see what we're going to do here. I am not sure what we're going to do here. this is a first.
It's not even a full moon.
No, it's not even a full moon.
Right.
Going to try one. I guess we'll try one other thing. We will be back in just a minute, folks.
Keeping it a phone to work.
I'm going to cut this video, so check back in just a minute for another video. Sorry about that. There we are with the...
We're going old school with the camera phone.
With the garbage vertical view for our video, which
it works. We're live. Finally, we're live.
I'm not going to be able to repost this, though.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you and I can just film another one and post it that way.
We'll see. We'll figure something out.
Are we online yet?
Well, we're on the old school camera phone, which I usually can't post it to.
We're online. Let me...
To the YouTube.
Well...
So, that's unfortunate. Let me try one other thing on this end. But, yeah, portrait mode. We're not too pleased with this, but...
Landscape is not working.
Well, I'm going to do this.
Oh, my God. We're going to record on the tablet
so that we can
we do this.
It can at least post this later. So...
My goodness. All right, you're going to have to get closer, huh?
Yeah. Okay. I think
I need to move my water. You can see because Chris is gonna.
All right.
Pass it this way.
Down you go, buddy.
All right.
Oh, is that for?
That's for me.
There you go.
And you can hand me my phone, which is above you.
Okay. Oh.
I thought it was above me.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we need a script.
One final thing.
This is it.
That would be the fridge.
Here you go.
Okay.
I am helpful, you see.
We are on prop duty.
Yeah.
So
I know you can't see it, but we do have a fire back there.
It's nice and roaring and toasty. And we have our eggnog.
Yes, because the real nog is out.
So I can't, now the catch is I can't see anybody's comments.
That's okay. I'll do it.
Lee's on comment duty.
All right. Lee's on comment. So. Sorry that I will not be able to directly address you like we normally do because technology, not sometimes. Apparently the issue is that Facebook suddenly decided that they no longer want to support landscape mode for streaming on our tablet, which is what we've been using for over 3 years now. So sorry about the hang up here. I'm going to have to...
Because that's my phone now. He can comment.
And then I went to try and use the computer, and, of course, the computer doesn't want to sync with anything either. So
there seems to be a conspiracy brewing in the comments, whether the cats did it or the spirits did it.
The cats love the attention, don't you, buddy?
See,
right there. Yeah, we got Mr. Nico's here. But, yeah, so here we are, about 10 minutes late.
Sorry about that. Ah, that's okay. I was late, too.
That's all right.
Now we're waiting on me.
Yep,
it's a holiday week, right, guys?
Yeah,
we go with the flow.
We're not getting paid for this. Sorry.
Why are we apologizing to you?
But we're happy to be here with you on this holiday week. So, yeah, we're going to, of course, subject matter for tonight, spirits of the shops.
Because why not?
Yes, why not? We are going to of course, you know, big shopping season, your inbox is probably getting flooded by, you know, holiday special deals, left and right. So we're going to be taking a dive in tonight to some haunted shops. Now, of course, we have talked about plenty of, like, haunted stores in various locations over the years. It hurts, like, of our other individual episodes. Of course, we featured some stores on them. All right, I'm just going to say that we featured some stores. And apparently lie, according to Beth. So apologies for that. But, yeah, I mean, now you're throwing me for a loop.
I mean, what stores have we featured, Chris?
I'm just sure we have.
Mm.
I'm just going
to...
No evidence. I'm just going to... Turn the lights on.
Oh, I thought he was just going to go.
Yeah, I'm just going to go.
It's just me and Beth tonight, my friend.
Yep.
Lots of restaurants, there might have been a few bookstores we might have featured. I don't think so.
There might have been gift shops at some of the locations, but I don't think we've actually spoken about shops.
Okay.
We're going to go through every single
one. Maybe later, but not right now.
All right, let's get going.
So we got you all here with us.
Okay, so Halloween really is in our rearview mirror, and, of course, there are spirited candles for everything. We are moving into the original spooky season. What is he doing?
He brought a tail. Nico brought his tail.
Nico has been on a tail theme today.
He's a tail theme.
Anyway, so now you're going to start heading out, finding those perfect gifts for your friends and family, weaving your way through the aisles of merchandise, pursuing goods of every sort, getting stamps with email. And it's easy for people to lose themselves in the moment of this frantic time of gift giving. But for every person who enters the store in the current moment, there are often thousands, if not millions, who have come before them, each on a mission of their own, each looking for that one thing. And for so many coming and going, it can be easy to see why there might be at least one soul who, let's just say, didn't quite go out.
It's not my phone.
Excuse me.
I ain't going to make nothing but excuses.
You need just a straight shot, honey.
I might need to go hit up the liquor cabinet.
In addition to their current purpose, some stores may have been built on land with a spirited attachment, while others may stock antique and other aging merchandise that continues to be cherished by an old soul. We've talked about that. And a store might not be the first thing that people think of when it comes to haunted locations, particularly with the winter holidays fast approaching. Yet there are so many reasons why our spirits may linger in these places, and it might just explain the shiver down your spine when you are passing through those brightly lit aisles. So let's head out to Oklahoma. This is actually where we left off 2 weeks ago, and about halfway between Oklahoma City and Tulsa, we find the small city of Bristow. Founded as a railroad town in the late 1800s, Bristow was, a smaller community, which today makes its way by supporting the surrounding agricultural community. On the northern outskirts of town stands a lonely convenience store that was once known as Kay's Corner at the intersection of Highway 66 and 48, a site whose haunting reputation has greatly overshadowed the store's diminutive. One former employee recalls an incident in which a ghost tried to help her with her nightly closing duties. I was cleaning the bathroom, and the light just flicked off, the toilet flushed, and I ran out of there as fast as I could. I couldn't go back in that bathroom for about 2 weeks. While other employees report bizarre occurrences as well. One remembers that she was cleaning the cappuccino machine and a Hostess snowball came hurling at her. It landed at my feet, she said, and that rack was always quite a ways for me. I know it couldn't have just fallen off and landed where it did. Employees believe that given the nature of the activity, there are likely at least two entities lingering about. One is kind of a prankster, and another one seems to have more malicious intentions. In November of 2004, a local paranormal investigation team set up audio and visual equipment after hours at Cave Corner to see if they could detect anything. In preparation for the investigation, the team researched the area surrounding the store, and they found that a young woman following a fight with her husband was hit by a semi-truck as she tried to cross Old Highway 66 right in front of the land where Case Corner resided. There have also been reports from people that they have seen a young woman standing in the window of the abandoned house that was owned by the lady who was killed.
Love window ghost.
While the investigation of Case Corner came up without any significant evidence, employees insist that there's something in the building. They maintain that there's always been unexplained noises and several instances of lights unexpectedly going on and off, radios coming on with no explanation whatsoever. And one former employee refused to go back into the kitchen area because she got a bad feeling. I would just walk in there and the hair on the back of my neck would stand up. While the paranormal investigators were not able to provide additional proof, they admitted the equipment in the world is no match for a person's instinct, saying the uneasy feeling and the hair standing up on the back of your neck are the best tools to detect spirits. One employee agrees there's definitely something there. So if you find yourself in the area, keep an eye out for what is now known as the PBQ convenience store. Even so, if you don't find yourself face-to-face with the spirit, you can partake in what some of the locals say are the best burgers around for miles. You just might want to steer clear of the Hostess snack cakes in case they decide to come flying again. Yes, Chris, what does your shirt say? I have a list.
Yes. I fully intend to haunt people when I die.
I was gonna say, like, I know the shirt, I just couldn't remember what the shirt was.
Yep, that's the shirt.
It's the shirt. All right, Trace.
I don't think being hit by a semi truck would be fun.
No.
I don't think you probably wouldn't feel much. At least
I hope it'll
not.
Be fast and
But Patrick's totally going to go off hitting something.
Well,
I did not include the haunted pet store in this one, Patrick. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. How
what?
I guess you're going to have to tell us.
Part two.
Shame.
There's a part two.
There is a part
it's
two.
It's in there. All right. So, I'm sorry, guys. We're going to go back to Aaron Burr because I found an Aaron Burr story.
It just barely touches on the guy.
It's still Aaron Burr.
It is. All right.
Because I could ambient with him. Hey, guys, that's the dork.
I am proud of my dorkiness. I earned that reputation.
Anyways, all right. So from is rural Oklahoma, as you may have guessed already, we're going to go to the part of the Big Apple. New York City's Soho neighborhood is known as a premier shopping destination, dotted with high-end boutiques and fancy chain stores, and amongst these shops, there is one that stands out for its haunts. 129 Spring Street is now the home of COS Clothing, but the site has a dark history that goes back a couple of centuries, the evidence of which dominates the interior of COS today. Amidst the clothing racks stands a large brick cylinder known as the Manhattan Well, and it's here that the murder of Guglielma Sands took place in 1799. Guglielma Sands, also known as Elma, which I'm going to use moving forward because it's so much easier, she had lived in a boarding house at 208 Greenwich Street in 1799. In December of that year, Elma had found herself in a secret love affair with a man who also lived on the street. The man's name was Levi Weeks. He was a carpenter in the local area. The two had hoped to elope. Elma had left her home on the night of December 22nd in hopes that she and Levi would return married. It was said that Elma left right around 8 that night. This was recorded by the cousin of Elma, Catherine Ring. She stated that the front door had closed around that time. However, she never saw Levi or Elma leaving. It wasn't until 10 that night that Levi arrived back at the home. He was demanding to know where his wife-to-be was. It was at this time that the entire home began to panic. Later in the investigation, witnesses would claim that they saw Elma at Lespinard's Meadow, a now long-forgotten wetland area in what is now the Tribeca neighborhood. The witnesses claimed she was with two other unidentified men. Just a few days later, Alma's body would be found in a local well not far from where she was last seen. Evidence suggested that Alma's neck was broken before she was dumped inside the well. The trial for Alma's death lasted only a little longer than a day. It was backed by two infamous lawyers. The lawyers were named Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton.
Told ya.
These lawyers were sought after by Levi's oldest brother. It was said that Levi was behind the murder. However, he was acquitted of the charges due to a lack of evidence. To this day, the murder is still a mystery. However, many people claim that they can see Alma haunting the well where her body was found over 200 years ago. The Manhattan Well was built very close to the depth of Alma Sands at Les Pernards Meadow. This was a very popular area to be for locals who were in love. This was especially a popular place in the winter. It was in the 1820s that many upper and middle class houses were built on this property. This also meant that the well was sealed over and is now in the basement of the building located at 129 Spring Street. Since the original building of this area, there have been several businesses in it. In the 1820s, there was a shop there that would sell remedies for those who were addicted to tobacco. After this, it became a beer hall for Germans. After the beer hall, it was left vacant for many years. In the 2000s, the well that was hidden for so many years would resurface in the headlines. A bistro in Manhattan, known as Manhattan Bistro, had bought the building to use it for more storage for the restaurant. At this time, they would excavate the cellar. It was at this point that the well was unearthed after over 200 years. The owner stated that the well gave them bad vibes due to its eerie presence. When they looked at it, they said it didn't look to have aged since the day it was uncovered, or since the day it was covered, rather. We don't need the. That was just the.
Okay. Oh, that was
computer.
The computer. Okay.
So.
I just saw a light change.
Yep. The computer just shut off. So, anyways, in the years since, the building has been turned into the COS store that stands there today, and the well doesn't appear to have aged a day. Since Alma was murdered, many people have reported seeing apparitions in that area around the building. Some people state they can even hear Alma screaming and pleading for her life. There are also many employees of the businesses that have resided in 129 Spring Street over the years that have reported paranormal happenings. The employees of the COS have blamed several occurrences on Alma, including missing merchandise, malfunctioning elevators, and random electrical outages that cannot be explained. Many people have turned to Alma's cousin for the hauntings and strange happenings that surround the well. Transcripts that were recorded after the acquittal state that Catherine Ring had cursed the room, stating that she calls upon the Almighty to curse them all. It's said that this curse had led to many deaths, including Judge Lansing, the one who acquitted Levi Weeks of the murder. About 30 years after the trial occurred, the judge had left his hotel in Manhattan. He went to the post office to post a letter. However, that day he left, he never returned. No one could find any trace of him. He basically vanished into thin air. The investigation into his disappearance had turned up nothing. This ultimately led the case to be abandoned. However, the locals believe that Alma had something to do with it. The Manhattan Well is a hidden gem. Yet use some discretion if you stop into COS to see it yourself. Apparently, some of the employees there are not fond of sightseers. Its appearance is unsettling, not only for the events that transpired there, but also for the fact that it looks as good as new after so many years. So is Alma behind all the strange happenings, or maybe is it her cousin's curse? No one knows for sure, and it's likely that this is one mystery that will never be fully resolved.
Also, I don't care what Hamilton said. He was not innocent. They had plenty of evidence. Yeah. Anyway. Next. All right, so we're going to fly over to San Francisco now because we can. And while the Tech Brothers, Rose, are here are the terrifying enough in their own right, we'll stay in our lane and stick to spirited things.
What's going on? I called out the Tech Bros in my...
Did you call them Tech Bros?
I called them Tech Bros in the script.
Oh, so they, they heard about it in advance.
The script is saved in the cloud. I'm sure they're spying on us.
Well, Google Drive does take your stuff from AI.
It's not Google Drive, but in any case, they saw it in the script and they decided to make my life difficult tonight.
Really tech bros.
So tech bros. It's all the tech bros' fault.
All right, so we're done with techie bashing. All right, on to the landmark flood building. Now, to be clear, this has nothing to do with the watery type of flood. This was a 12-story structure at the corner of Market and Powell Street, and it was built by James L. Flood. That flood. And it was a tribute to his father, James Clare Flood. When it was completed in 1904, it was the largest building in San Francisco and is still known today for its beautiful blue-gray sandstone covering bricks, high ceilings, iron-railed stairways, and it was built to withstand things. So let's talk about those things. There was, of course, the devastating earthquake that struck in 1906, and it stood still, and it was fine. And then recently, it was actually the flagship store for Gap, but they closed their doors permanently in 2020. We all know why. We're not going to talk about that. Today, however, it has a diverse set of tenants, including retail shops and professional service firms. However, the marble hallways of the building hide a few dark secrets. The flood building rose from the ashes of the Baldwin Hotel, which was destroyed by fire in 1898.
Was it named after Alec Baldwin?
Yeah, too early.
Oh, do we know that?
Well, I know it's not Alec.
Well, he could be a vampire.
It could.
Was he named after?
I don't know if he's from Rochester. You should know that.
Yeah, do you know about Alec Baldwin? So, you know, do you think you're from Rochester?
Yeah, I'm sure I grew up right next door to him. Not really. I have no idea.
And he went to school with the one guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. So it used to be, the hotel used to be a destination resort for the upper classes. It had a swimming pool, an ice skating rink. Any of us, best of both worlds, right? The building security officers often reported hearing people, including young children, crying out at night. He believes it was the ghosts of the people who remained trapped inside as the Baldwin Hotel had burned to the ground. Two people were killed in the flames, and countless others certainly would have borne the mental scars of the calamity for the rest of their lives. While the flood building managed to survive the devastating earthquake of 1906, it did have some scars. The first two floors of the building were damaged by the quake and the subsequent fire. Not all of those who were in the building at the time came away unscathed. Some of their spirits seemed to have joined the victims of the hotel fire, and their fearful crying echoing up and down the hallways of the flood building. Yes, it is the mailman. He is running late. Over the years, the flood building has seen many highs and lows and served countless different businesses and agencies and has survived attempts at demolition, which to the relief of preservationists today, it still stands. While the future of the flood building is secure for now, the past will always wear the scars of the tumultuous events the site witnessed over a century ago, and the residents' spirits are unlikely to let the retailers forget about them anytime soon.
Okay, Vincent is guarding the door.
Place I want to go.
Where?
Oh, yes.
The bookstore.
This is it, yes. So, we're going to move on to the Motor City.
Because y'all know we like our research Motor City.
Detroit.
Aha.
Yes. So this city has faced, you know, admittedly, faced a lot of trouble in recent decades, evidenced by the many ruined buildings and abandoned factories that do dot the landscape. That said, there are still many people there that are making a go of it, including one of the most renowned bookstores in all the world, John K. King Used and Rare Books. This store, standing four floors tall, houses over 1 million books separated into 900 categories. It also happens to be the home of a couple of ghosts. Now, John K. King, the namesake for the store, credits the late Elsie Freitag with his success. Elsie was King's guidance counselor in high school, and she was the one who steered him towards making his passion, buying and selling used books and antiques, into his career. It's said that Elsie even dismissed King early from school on Friday afternoon so he could set up his table at antique shows.
After graduation, King tried his hand at college in upstate New York. By his own admission, he probably spent much more time scavenging through old barns than preparing for his classes. By 1971, King had established his first store in Dearborn, Michigan, and then later in downtown Detroit's theater building, Michigan Theater Building. Yes. The Michigan Theater Building is notorious amongst Detroit preservationists. Once an ornate Italian Renaissance-style 1920 showcase, in 1977, the theater itself was gutted and turned into a parking garage. King soon outgrew his storefront in the Michigan Theater Building. His first solution was to rent empty offices upstairs in the building, sending sometimes befuddled customers up staircases and down hallways, with keys in hand, searching for the office that held the special collections that they sought. It wasn't long before John decided to buy a building of his own. In 1983, King purchased the abandoned four-story Advanced Glove Factory building at 901 West Lafayette in downtown Detroit. Within a few years, King was utilizing all four floors of the building for his retail concern, filling the basement to overflowing with duplicates and books waiting to be processed. Several years later, King bought the office building behind his store, the old Otis Elevator Building, and set up his offices and rare book room upstairs. In his years of business, King has handled countless rare and collectible books, including the archives of some of Detroit's original auto barons, a Mark Twain biography that just happened to have an original photo of the author pressed between its pages. And a presentation signed by a one-time junior senator from Massachusetts, John F. Kennedy. Since he's been in business, King has also played host to a number of big-time movers and shakers, including U.S. governors, senators, A-list musicians and actors, and more. His store truly is worth a pilgrimage for lovers of collectible books. These days, King says he's content with having over a million books in stock, two stores. He did wind up adding a smaller one in the trendy Detroit suburbs, and about a dozen employees who love books almost as much as he does. As for what is now his bookstore, the John K. King was built in 1906, and until 1929, it was a hat factory. Then it became the Advanced Glove Company. When the expressway came, instead of knocking the building down, they physically moved the entire building about 250 feet to its current location. In 1947, it was put on wood rollers and rolled down the block. Then in 1981, the glove company went bankrupt and left the building vacant until John purchased it in 1983 and officially opened its doors on January 1st of 1984. Many people think that John King's bookstore is haunted. Now, over the years, there have been numerous reports from customers of supernatural and unexplainable phenomena, including footsteps and whisperings in empty hallways, lights turning on and off, feeling like they're being watched, inanimate objects suddenly moving, doors and cabinets opening and closing, items disappearing and reappearing, feeling something lightly brush past them, inexplicable cold spots, and more. It's possible that many of these spirited activities come in with books and other antiques, and that they are enjoying the opportunity to stretch their legs in the spacious store. King recalled one particular collection that came in several years ago. He said, "Years ago, we had bought an estate from a murder-suicide victim. When we moved her books and other objects to the fourth floor, strange things started happening. Lights would go on and off randomly. We would hear bizarre noises. Books would fall off the shelves by themselves. We weren't scared, it was just irritating. Soon after, employees reported hearing footsteps and doors slamming, but when the woman's things were moved out, King said everything went back to normal. He said, nothing happened ever again that was weird. It doesn't mean that she's not there, I just haven't necessarily noticed her since." They also recall a time when a paranormal team came into the store to have a look around. They claimed to have located one authentic ghost. They told us that back when this was a factory, a man killed himself on the third floor. He fell in love with a female coworker. She rebuffed him, so he killed himself up there, and his ghost haunts the third floor to this day. He is supposedly responsible for many sightings, cold spots, and echoing footsteps through the building. Given the historic nature of the building and their line of business, it's very likely that the John K. King Used in Rare Books store will continue to have hauntings. With so many well-loved artifacts coming and going every day, there's bound to be a spirit or two hitching a ride along the way. My what?
You're right after.
Oh, there, uh-oh. Somebody find it?
Oh, yeah. The right after eye. In his telescope.
I'll just stand out there.
Shh. Nico thinks it's now.
Everything sits. It's with his house. And everything in it sits. We are his humans.
And he's a tiny little fuzzy guy.
Yes, he is.
All right.
That's our cat's role.
We're going to come back to the East Coast. Now, I couldn't do retail without actually throwing in a grocery store, because everybody's going to the grocery store this week, right? Or you've been to the grocery store, you probably now have a bad word. Thawing in your fridge. But we're going to go to Wilmington, Massachusetts. This actually took place only 2 years ago in April of 2019. And this ghost story sighting, or this ghost sighting from this grocery store, actually went viral. So we decided we'd investigate a little bit more. The press statement was eye-catching. From Market Basket spokeswoman Justin... Justin Griffin. As far as we know, all of our stores are ghost-free, but if there's anything to it, she's probably attracted to our Victorian-era prices.
Oh!
Always marketing.
Yes.
Merchandising.
All right, so.
Stores.
Proud of it.
So, Griffin's unusual statement was occasioned by the report of ghost sighting at a Massachusetts-based chain location, as I said, in Wilmington. This took place on March 13th of 2019. A 25-year-old bakery department employee named Christina Bush says she had just finished inscribing a custom cake when it was bringing it to the counter when she spied an old woman staring at her from farther down the aisle. Later, in an interview, Bush emphasized, "It wasn't like something out of the corner of my eye. She was staring right at me." It must have been for a second and a half. Bush, who was a psychology major at UMass Lowell, might not have been given the woman a second thought had it not been for her appearance. According to Bush, the woman was wearing an old-fashioned white dressing gown and cap. She was not wearing shoes, clear violation of the store's policy. And Bush looked away, then quickly turned back to confirm what she had seen. The woman was gone. The story might have ended there had curiosity not gotten the better of Bush. She searched the aisles, concerned that the woman might need help, but she had vanished. When she went home that day, Bush fired off a message to all Wilmington-centric Facebook groups. This is going to sound really, really strange, but has anybody seen a ghost in the Wilmington Market Basket? Her question generated hundreds of responses. Some were dismissive, but others claimed to have had a similar experience. It didn't take long for the debate to catch the eye of the local media, and soon articles started popping up on news sites. After local newspapers reported on Bush's experience, the reported sighting picked up momentum on social media, and Market Basket itself weighed in with the aforementioned press release, which was cleverly used to become the strange moment in the spotlight as an opportunity to trumpet its Victorian-era prices. Now, while Market Basket reassert the public that there was nothing to see here, the Wilmington Police Department released a video containing conclusive proof of ghostly going on. Not to be outdone, Massachusetts U.S. Representative Seth Moulton tweeted, "Apparently a ghost is haunting the Wilmington Market Basket. I thought I only needed to worry about witches and ghouls in Salem." In awe of what had allegedly happened to her, Bush went home and did some rudimentary research to see if she could figure out who, what, or what was haunting the Market Basket that she had worked at for 11 years. What Bush learned is that the settlers were believed to have arrived in Wilmington in 1665, with a rural town well established by 1773, according to the town's historical site.
Bush said she heard that the current Market Basket property was actually owned by a doctor before becoming a grocery store in 1953. Perhaps the woman succumbed to an illness while under the care of the doctor. It's admitted a bit of a stretch, but more solid answers for the apparition were not forthcoming. No matter what the people of Wilmington have seen in their Market Basket grocery store, it certainly gave them a little spirited excitement to chat about in the spring of 2019.
Yep. All right. So now we're going to make our one international stop for the evening.
I had to throw it in.
Yep. So we're going to go and take a hop across the pond to Brighton, England. Now, as we have discussed many times before, Britain has its fair share of ghosts, including a mischievous entity at the Guitar, Amp, and Keyboard Center in Brighton. The ghost has been caught on video at least twice being a spooky little devil and messing around with customers and merchandise in the store. Most music stores have security cameras set up to catch anyone bold enough to try and steal an instrument from them, but the Guitar, Amp, and Keyboard Center captured what looked like a full figure walking towards a customer, and the customer didn't take notice at all. In the second video, while the store is closed, they also film some guitars moving on their own, as well as a price tag getting thrown to the ground when the shop was closed and empty. Now, for a little more detail, on May 6th of 2019, so fairly recently, the store owners became aware that something was amiss when the motion alarm was triggered at around 5 a.m., despite there being no indication of a break-in. After checking the closed-circuit TV footage, at the 5:47 a.m. timestamp, they noticed that two of the guitars hanging up in the store started to swing on their own, even though the other guitars next to them had remained still. Around 30 minutes later, a price tag was also mysteriously ripped from one of the shelves. The owners told the Daily Star that they don't know how the guitars could move, stating, "Some say it could be that the guitars were readjusting themselves after they were hung incorrectly, but there's no wind there and it's not near any draft or ventilation, so there aren't many other suggestions." They went on to speak about the bizarre events they've seen, saying staff think it's odd and a bit creepy, but it hasn't affected anyone coming in. Considering that the modern city of Brighton sits on land that has been inhabited since the Bronze Age, it's anyone's guess as to who or what may be lingering on at the shop. Is it a modern era guitar aficionado, or is it maybe something much older that is fascinated by the beautiful sounds that come from an instrument that didn't exist so many ages ago? No matter what, the activity is just one small tile in the great mosaic landscape that is Britain's haunted history.
England is really haunted.
You want me to start on the next one?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, I will say, this is kind of my favorite story for the evening, just because of the kind of the historic background for it and just how unexpected it is, actually. So we are going to return stateside, and we're going to head to the Texas Gulf Coast city of Galveston. And it's here that we will turn our attention to the local Walmart.
Now, Walmart. I found a hug at Walmart.
Now, not necessarily what you would expect to be one of the most haunted locations on Galveston Island, right? But, well, when people head into the lone Walmart on Galveston Island, it's often to grab last-minute beach supplies when they forgot in their rush to head out on vacation. But not all of them. The store, which opened in 1994, also draws its fair share of visitors because of its tragic past. The Seawall Walmart is where the former St. Mary's Orphans Asylum used to reside. You can see evidence of this by looking on the seawall side of Seawall Boulevard across from Walmart, where there is a historical marker for St. Mary's Orphanage. Wherever they are in the world, on September 8th, the members of the Congregation of the Sisters of Charity of the Incarnate Word sing an old French hymn, "Queen of the Waves." They have carried on this tradition every year since 1900. as the song provides the sisters an opportunity to pause and remember all who lost their lives in the devastating hurricane over a century ago. Striking Galveston on September 8th of 1900, the Great Storm is considered the worst natural disaster in the nation's history. More than 6,000 men, women, and children lost their lives. Among the dead were 10 sisters and 90 children from the St. Mary's Orphans Asylum, operated by the Sisters of Charity. The sisters also operated St. Mary's Infirmary in Galveston. It was the first Catholic hospital in the state, established in 1867. The sisters were called to Galveston by Catholic Bishop Claude M. Dubois in 1866 to care for the many sick and infirm in what was the major port of entry for Texas. They were also charged with caring for orphaned children, most of whom had lost parents during yellow fever epidemic. At first, the Sisters of Charity opened an orphanage within the hospital, but later moved it 3 miles to the beach to the west on beachfront property. The location seemed ideal as it was far from town and the threat of yellow fever. As Galveston entered a new century, it was one of the wealthiest cities per capita in the United States and one of the largest in the state. It was a prosperous community with a bustling port. A population of about 36,000, Galveston appeared to be poised for greatness. And then, one weekend in September of 1900, the same proximity to the sea that had made the community grow and prosper as a port city was to change Galveston Island forever. On September 8th, Galveston became the victim of a powerful hurricane of such destructive force that whole blocks of homes were completely swept away and one-sixth of the population was killed. Beginning early on the morning of Saturday, September 8th, 1900, the winds began coming in strongly from the north. Despite the opposing winds, the tides from the southern Gulf waters also rose, sending large crashing waves upon the beachfront. Sister Elizabeth Ryan, one of 10 sisters at St. Mary's Orphanage, had come into town that morning to collect food. Despite pleas from Mother Gabriel, the assistant superior at St. Mary's Infirmary, for her to stay at the hospital until the storm passed, Sister Elizabeth said she had to return to the orphanage. Sister Elizabeth said that she had the provisions in the wagon, and if she did not return to the children, they would have no supper. She didn't know that whether she returned there or not, there would be no more suppers at the orphanage. During the afternoon, the winds and rain continued to increase. The tides of the Gulf rose higher and higher, with fierce waves crashing on the beach, sending floodwaters into residential areas. St. Mary's Orphanage consisted of two large two-story dormitories just off the beach behind a row of tall sand dunes that were supported by salt cedar trees. The buildings had balconies facing the Gulf. According to one of the boys at the orphanage, the rising tides began eroding the sand dunes as though they were made of flour. Soon, the waters of the Gulf reached the dormitories. The sisters at the orphanage brought all the children into the girls' dormitory because it was the newer and stronger of the two buildings. In the first floor chapel, they tried to calm the children by having them sing Queen of the Waves. The waters continued to rise. Taking the children to the second story of the dormitory, the sisters had Henry Esquire, a worker, collect clothesline rope. Again, they had the boys and girls sing Queen of the Waves. One of the boys later said that the children were very frightened and the sisters were very brave. By 6 p.m., the wind was gusting past 100 miles per hour, and the waters of the Gulf and Bay had met, completely flooding the city. Residents climbed to the second stories, attics, and even roofs of their homes. Flying debris struck many who dared venture outside their homes. Around 7:30 p.m., the main tidal surge struck the south shore. Houses along the beachfront were lifted from their foundations and sent like battering rams into other houses. Houses fell upon houses. At St. Mary's Infirmary, the floodwaters filled the first floor. From the second-story balcony, the sisters pulled refugees in as they floated by and brought them into the overcrowded hospital. Almost every window in the facility was broken out by sending the wind and rain whipping through the building. At the orphanage, the children and sisters heard the crash of the boys' dormitory as it collapsed and was carried away by the floodwaters. The sisters cut the clothesline rope into sections and used it to tie the children to the cinchars that they wore around their waist. Each sister tied herself between 6 to 8 children. It was a valiant, yet sacrificial effort to save the children. Some of the older children climbed onto the roof of the orphanage. Eventually, the dormitory building that had been the sanctuary for the children and sisters was lifted from its foundation. The bottom fell out and the roof came crashing down, trapping those inside. Only 3 boys from the orphanage survived: William Murney, Frank Madra, and Albert Campbell. Miraculously, all 3 ended up together in a tree in the water. After floating for more than a day, they were eventually able to make their way into town, where they told the sisters what had happened at the orphanage. One of the boys remembered a sister tightly holding 2 small children in her arms, promising not to let go. The sisters were buried wherever they were found, and with the children still attached to them. 2 of the sisters were found together across the bay on the mainland. One of them was tightly holding 2 small children in her arms. Even in death, she had kept her promise not to let go. There were 93 children cared for by the 10 sisters. And again, after the storm, 90 of those children and all 10 of the sisters were dead. The death and destruction in Galveston was unbelievable. More than 6,000 were dead, and the bodies were littered throughout the city. It would be months before some would be uncovered. A complete list of the dead was never made. It was estimated that the winds reached 150 miles per hour, or maybe even 200. The tidal surge has been estimated at from 15 to 20 feet. Whole blocks of homes have been completely destroyed, leaving little more than a brick or two. In all, more than 3,600 homes were destroyed. A great wall of debris wrapped itself around St. Mary's Infirmary on the eastern end of the city and then zigzagged through the city to the beach. At places, the wall was 2 stories high. At St. Mary's Infirmary, there was no food or water. While the main hospital building was still standing, the adjacent structures had been destroyed. On September 8th of 1994, a Texas historical marker was placed at 69th Street and Seawall Boulevard, marking the site of the former orphanage. The descendants of 2 of the survivors, Will Murney and Frank Madra, were returned to participate in the marker dedication. As part of the ceremony, Queen of the Waves was sung again at the same time and place as it was during the great 1900 storm. The marker went up on the same year that the Walmart opened on the site where the orphanage once stood. Walmart employees have been reporting misplaced toys, missing pallets of toy inventory, phantom children's laughter, and cries for parents. A former employee tells a story about how she once heard a child crying and crying for their mother. She went to find the child, thinking they were lost and needed help finding their mother. She searched the toy department. She called out to the child without an answer and even had other employees and customers trying to assist in finding the lost child. They never did find the child, never saw a crying child for that matter, and suddenly the crying was said to just stop. It always sounded like the child was just on the next pile over, and 2 employees argued back and forth saying, "Don't you see her? She's on your side," with the other responding, "No, she's on your side. I can hear her." But they were unable to ever find the little girl. In addition to the chaos in the toy department, employees have also reported cash registers going haywire, automatic doors opening and closing on their own, and items inexplicably being found out of place, not only on store shelves, but also in store offices. Another widespread story concerns the time Walmart allowed FEMA workers inside the heavily damaged store to fetch supplies after Hurricane Ike in 2008. When they entered, they heard children laughing and coughing, said local author Kathleen Maka, who devoted a chapter of her 2016 book, Ghosts of Galveston, to the haunted Walmart. They thought that some children had snuck into the building, so they did a full search. And even though they didn't find any children, they did find children's footsteps in the muck on the floor, even though there was no other entrance at the time. One employee who spent 15 years on the night shift at the store, Denise Sandoval, described how most of the supernatural activity seems to happen around 1 a.m., which was the apex of the storm in 1900. Denise described one unsettling event where a fire extinguisher flew off its post and struck a grocery cart, just one of the many weird events that have taken place there over the years. Officially, the store seems happy to at least wink at all of the alleged ghostly activity. The most popular video on its Facebook page is entitled, "You Know What They Say About the Galveston Walmart." And in early Friday morning, the trio of managers on duty were neither surprised nor annoyed by a Charon reporter's question. They declined to give their names and claimed to have never seen anything amiss themselves, but they did allow that all the ghost stories have definitely been good for business. As one quipped, "If it brings us tourists, there's ghosts everywhere."
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
Nico was trying to get your attention earlier.
Okay.
It was really sad. So I'm just going to hand this to you for when he comes back.
Nico!
He wanted you to play with it.
Oh,
buddy.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah, he's a good boy.
Favorite.
Oh, he was, like, reached up and, like,
tapped me. I'm sorry, buddy. I was reading. I didn't see you.
All right, so we're going to move to Arcadia, Florida. Now, we've already discussed John K. King's used and rare books and some antiques are haunted, but we have a similar situation in what was once the Arcadia Rare Books, Opera House and Bazaar Bazaar. After the fallout from COVID, the Arcadia Opera House Bazaar Bazaar closed its doors forever in 2021. Fortunately, despite suffering significant damage in the Hurricane Ian last year, the building has been saved and restored and is now serving again in its original capacity as an opera house and community center. The building was erected in 1906, a year after a fire destroyed most of Arcadia's downtown, including the orphanage and that was on the same property. Soon afterward, legend has it that a little girl fell out of a second-story window and a spurned lover was said to have hanged herself from the rafters of the opera stage. The spirits are said to were said to haunt the building, and the little girl was frequently seen looking out of its window. Unexplained sounds like laughter and footsteps of children were heard throughout the store. For years, it operated as a museum and housed one of the largest antique shops in the state, the Bazaar Bazaar, on the second floor. It was also suspected by many to be one of the most haunted buildings in Florida. To reach the second floor of the Arcadia Opera House, you had to climb 27 old creaky stairs. But that's not an ominous sign of what's to come. I don't know what is. Despite its haunting reputation, the Bazaar Bazaar's owner, James Crosby, wasn't sure what to think. He said of the stories, "At some points, I always get the impression that there's somebody else here. Whether it's just the size and the scope of the place or the lighting, but I'm always catching something out of the corner of my eye that makes me stop and turn my head." By day, the Opera House was an antique shop. By night, it played host to paranormal investigators. Eric Kincaid is one of several investigators who had recorded electronic voice phenomenon, or spirits, there. Kincaid says, and others pointed to the Opera House's dark history to explain the ghost. He recalled the story of a woman who was sitting at the stoplight on the corner of Oak and Polk, who looked up and saw the little girl staring at her. And as she sat there, through three red lights, somebody finally honked, and she looked back at the little girl and it disappeared from the window. Investigators also claimed to pick up voices on the opera stage. It said that the spurred lover was in love with the original owner of the building, J.J. Hurd. They had an affair, and the woman leveled an ultimatum at Hurd. "Choose me or your wife." Apparently, the woman wasn't expecting Hurd to decide to stay with his wife, and she subsequently hung herself in the rafters of Hurd's theater. She was found there the following morning. The dark history of the building brought in as many paranormal enthusiasts as it did shoppers during his time as the Bazaar Bazaar. Only time will tell if the haunting continues as the old theater is reclaimed for its original purpose. And I mean, what's a good theater without a good ghost? I like theaters with ghosts. Yep. All right, so that is our last story for the evening. Thank you for bearing with us through our technical difficulties.
We ended on time, though.
We did.
It was a shorter script, though.
And we also, well, we replaced our pre-story banter with technical difficulties.
True. I guess we were ready to just get it on with.
Yeah. So our next two shows, we're going to be off for a couple of weeks.
Yes, so it is going to be 3 weeks before we're back on again.
Yep, the 11th.
I think. I think that sounds right.
Yes, the 11th and the 18th, so we're going to do back-to-back.
Yeah, back-to-back, and it's both going to be the same theme. It's going to be like the Victorian-era Christmas ghost stories.
So these ones are ones that take place in America.
Yes.
I found an American Victorian ghost story.
Yes.
America.
So, as well, we have certainly featured plenty of British writers on our Victorian Christmas ghost stories before. This time it's going to be from American authors.
We've never featured M.R. James.
Hmm?
We've never featured M.R. James. So,
is he in it?
He's not American. So
okay.
I can tell you.
Oh, all right.
Nico has taken off.
Hi, Nico.
All right.
But anyway, so yeah, that 3 weeks, then we'll be here back-to-back. And our next, real ghost stories, like the stories that we typically share, we will be back with those in January. So.
And I don't know the theme yet. I have to write that script still. Oh, right. I offered to. I won't be able to.
Okay.
So I will write the script. Got it.
But we'll get there, and we will do our great reveal for that later. We're not going to do that right now.
Like, guys, like, people are going to show up for this. They're going to get dressed up. Wild.
But anyway, so, yeah, aside from that, we're kind of chill. We had a tour tonight.
We did have a tour tonight.
Travis, our one of our many amazing guys, Travis, is out wandering Shaco tonight, or hell, he was. He should have wrapped up about an hour ago.
Yeah, he's probably done by now. Yeah.
But,
so, yeah, he was out on a tour. We have haunted dinners coming up in January and March. They're on the schedule already, so check that out. First one is January 6th.
Yep.
And it will be 12 days of Christmas. So
yes, because it actually is. If you are Christian, it's actually going to be on January 6th, which is Epiphany. So it is basically the end of the 12 days of Christmas. So we are going to be doing Christmas ghost stories. Yes, it is January 6th, but still right there in the 12 days of Christmas time.
Also,
trip.
When Shakespeare, like when 12th night.
Yeah.
What 12th night? And then we have another one, as I said, in March. Also in January and February, we do have our special event with John Marshall House. So I would not forget if you didn't mention that. So, yeah. Definitely come check that out. Again, those are on the schedule. I believe it's the third Saturday of each of the month.
Second Saturday in January.
Okay.
And then I think it's the last Saturday in February.
Okay.
It's like they're about a month and a half apart from each other.
Okay.
But it has to be because we have so much going on. So there's the dinner the first Saturday, John Marshall the second Saturday. Third Saturday in January is Hanover Tavern Paracon.
Right, that's right.
So we will be there, and we are going to be doing our Shadows of Shaco tour that night at least once, if not twice, because
it's Poe's birthday.
It's Poe's birthday. Birthday bash at the Poe Museum. Our friends, right there in Shaco Bottom, we're going to be, having our Shadows of Shaco tour. Will be available for folks that want to come on out and celebrate both Poe's birthday and get spooky stories with us.
Yep. Poe's birthday is going to be really fun. They have a lot of parties and alcohol.
Yep.
Which, as you guys know, we enjoy alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything else about it.
It's fun.
But you know that Beth and I are going to pretend to be each other.
We're going to be up at the Hanover Tavern Paracon, and I'll be at the Poe birthday bash giving that Shadows tour.
Like, swapping.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'll be at the Paracon the whole time.
All day long.
Going to be doing a panel.
Yes.
Panel with some other fun spooky people from the region.
Who all is showing up at Paracon?
A whole bunch of people.
They have just started announcing that.
So if you want Facebook, Hanover Tavern Paracon, you can look it up. They got the event page there, and you can see who's confirmed to be there and all that fun stuff.
Well, we know Trans and Paranormal's going to be there.
Yes. There will be quite a – it's a big draw for the paranormal people. So between the events that go on during the day and the market that will be there during the day, then there is the big investigation that night. So, yeah, that's going to be a big and fun event. We're looking forward to that. And hard to believe, that's actually 2 months from today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, right around the corner. Yeah. And then, well, that last Saturday, it's not so much for the general public, but we're going
to. We're actually hosting a convention or conference for Ghost Tour Guides.
Yep. So we'll have Ghost Tour people from all across the country are going to be coming here to Richmond, and we're going to be hanging out with them that weekend. So, sorry, not general public type thing, but something cool that we're doing with our friends in the locally owned and operated Ghost Tour community.
Yep. We have a lot of friends.
We do.
It's about networking.
Right. Well,
they're popular.
I'd like to think that people like us.
Well, I know people like me.
Yeah.
And the cats. The people like the cats probably more than Beth and I combined. But,
oh, yeah. They come for the cats.
Yeah.
But we have like a turnout tonight, guys. We have like 9 people on. Now there were like several phones of ours on. But,
anyways, hope that you enjoyed the stories tonight. And when you do go shopping next time, particularly, say, that old antique store or something like that, maybe if you get that funny feeling off your spine or something.
Mm-hmm. Also, don't add ghosts on Black Friday.
Oh, yes.
Be kind. Be kind to your fellow shoppers.
As we like to say on our tours, everybody who joins us for a tour also leaves the tour at the end.
We don't add ghosts.
No adding ghosts. We don't need any more stories on our tours, and we don't want you to become a fixture in any of our stories.
I definitely don't need any more stories on my tours. I noticed.
But with that, we will go ahead and we will bid you adieu for this evening. Remember, you can join us for ghost tours basically any night of the week. Go ahead, check out our calendar. We have a lot coming up. We have Churchill on Wednesday.
Yes, it is.
And then a couple of tours Friday, Saturday. So, we got, and then week after week. So, all that kind of stuff going on. We have the special events that are coming up and be back here in the future.
Oh, yeah, and then GalaxyCon is coming in March. There's so much to do.
There is. We're not
the triplet panels right now.
Yeah, they haven't opened for panel submissions yet. So, we'll get there. So, in any case, if y'all are like, continue the conversation or whatever, go ahead, drop us a note at any time. We're happy to hear from you. But for now, we will bid you all adieu and have a good night.
Good night. Bye. I'll be back at the next one, probably.